up, everyone? This is the Celtics Talk Podcast coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee, just 99 cents any size. That's 99 good reasons to switch. And this is a special Celtics Talk Podcast.
What am I doing here?
It's
what
always am I doing special here? When Drapes is in the building, but we got Drapes, Shirai, and Chris Mannix.
The only reason I'm here is to siphon off listeners from your podcast and bring them over to mine.
Both teams play hard.
Shirai, you know why we got them. How many Twitter followers you have?
More than you.
Exactly. Yes. So we need you to retweet this. This out on Twitter.
I get paid for that.
Drive the numbers for the Celtics Talk Podcast. No, but Chris, seriously, man. Oh. You know, you are one of the best basketball minds in the business. You know, you're probably like 15 or 20 on the list. So it's good to have you here, man. It's we got a lot to get to. So.
Backhanded.
That was a class. I mean, bless his soul. Dean Smith was the king of the backhanded compliment. That was Dean Smith-esque right there.
I mean,
way to go, Drapes.
I mean, quid pro quo. I mean, Draper, you're a great host. I mean, you're probably 25th or 30th
in the league.
Top 25.
Maybe top 25 in this market. Maybe.
Look, I'll give him top 31 in the league. You know, I'll put it there.
Oh, man, I see what this is turning into. Gang up or Drapes. But
if you swing, you get swung
because
on.
Because I'm the
That's
point guard,
works.
I'm going to shift right into Kyrie Irving talk, guys. It is Thursday, and we're waiting to hear about Kyrie's second opinion. I'll start with you, Shirai, since you're the veteran of this podcast. Chris, you sit there over the little kids table and wait till we call on you.
Wow.
And Shirai, what do you think? How concerned are you about this second opinion?
Well, I'm not concerned about the second opinion per se as much as I'm concerned about just the fact that we're having this conversation and that we're in this stage of the season. And we're having serious conversations about whether the best player on your team is going to be ready to roll come playoff time. This whole situation makes me nervous and a little bit uncomfortable. And obviously this is something that Kyrie has been able to deal with and manage in the past, but the fact that it has reached the point that it's at right now, at this point in the season, that in itself makes me a little bit nervous.
Look, at some point, it sure seems like Kyrie Irving is going to need some kind of procedure on that knee. Now, I don't want to say surgery because that implies something else, but we heard last summer about a possibility Kyrie would have some kind of cleanup procedure on the knee, so would it shock me if that happened? Absolutely not. Now, when does it happen? I think that's the question we're dealing with right now. Is this something Kyrie can play through till the end of the postseason, have whatever he needs to have done, and still be healthy in time to train this offseason, to be back for training camp? These are kind of the open-ended questions here that we don't have an answer to yet.
Yeah, but and if you're Brad Stevens, and when you hear him talk about the knee, it's all about whatever it takes to get Kyrie better. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him the rest of the regular season, Chris. Maybe a game, maybe two, but what do we have? 11 games left to go. This whole talk about should they shut Kyrie down? To me, it's not a question of should they. I think they will until this knee gets better. But my concern is who's to say it won't flare up again during the postseason?
No, look, the one benefit that the postseason has is that you have a spaced out schedule. And you know, Kyrie won't have to play back-to-backs. He won't have to play three games in four nights. He's already out for this upcoming road trip. He's getting this opinion. That puts him to, what, a week and a half from when he might play again? We'll see where he is at that point. At that point, you've got, what, less than 10 games left in the season. So I could see it, too, him coming back at the tail end and playing in the playoffs. I think that's still realistic because everything I hear from people inside the organization is that, look, it's not structural. It's not like he needs to have a significant surgery to fix this issue. And as long as that remains the case, I do think we'll see Kyrie Irving in the playoffs.
And from what I gather, there hasn't been anything that has happened or changed that makes them believe that he has to have something right now, right this minute. And, the second opinion, I think more than anything else, I think it's to confirm that the course that they've taken with him is the right course, that rest is going to be the best thing for him at this particular juncture. Now, if they're considering having some type of procedure, obviously you got to think about timetable. Will he be back in time for the playoffs? Will he be done for the rest of the year and the playoffs? Those are some of the things, the open-ended questions that Chris alluded to earlier. Those are some of the things that they should be getting some type of clarity on in the coming days so that they can proceed in a direction that they know, okay, he's either with us or he's not. Don't be like San Antonio has been with Kawhi where, you know, we think he's healthy, but his people aren't really sure or there's you need to know if your best player is ready to roll right. when it's time to roll. And right now, the Celtics, they're trying to get clarity on that.
Is there any major concern? Because Chris Broussard said it, and I know he couched it, you know, 20 or 30 times by saying, you know, I'm not saying this is 100% going to happen, but there are some in the organization who are concerned that this could also keep him out of the postseason.
I have not come across right. said person. I can tell you that, you know, extra caution will be used in this situation. Mm-hmm. Not to say that the Celtics had these lofty expectations going into this postseason, but I think we can all kind of agree, and I know, Kyle, you're the ultimate green teamer here, but I think we can all kind of agree that the injury to Marcus Smart, that's probably going to keep him out for at least the first couple of rounds, the season-ending injury to Daniel Theis, the fact that Gordon Hayward is not coming back, it basically means the Celtics' chances of really getting past the second round are extremely difficult right. at this point. So what is the point of pushing Kyrie Irving that hard if that's all it kind of amounts to get out of that second round or whatever? So I think the recent rash of injuries, I think that maybe has cleared some perspective here, given them some clarity on what they are as a team. So if Kyrie is, if he's not going to, put it this way, he's not going to play one game in the postseason and take the next one off. Right. It's not going to be kind of like Isaiah was last year, yeah. where he was day to day in the postseason. I think either he's going to play in the postseason or he's not.
Right. And he's, you know, he's been managing that pain all season long. And again, with those playoffs being so more spaced out, it's a lot easier to play through the pain because you've got more time. And to Chris's point, is it really worth one round? Is it worth rolling a dice for one round?
Well, hold up, Shirai. Hold up.
I'm asking a question.
I'm getting pissed off.
You can still win one round without him, too,
right,
by the way.
I mean, right.
Yeah, you can, but, you know, you called me a green teamer, so I'm going to play that role right now.
Tough for you.
A month ago, we were talking about Eastern Conference Finals, NBA Championship. NBA Finals berth. And so, as a Celtics fan, it has to suck these last few weeks, because you mentioned that clarity to know that, all right, we lost Gordon Hayward. But then, when you're supposed to go down, the team goes up, and they still remain contenders. And now, that clarity you're talking about is they aren't Eastern Conference contenders, like NBA Finals contenders
Drapes,
anymore.
The point that you made at the very beginning of your monologue, a month ago, a lot has changed.
I know a lot
has changed from a month ago. That's why the narrative has changed. That's why, to a large extent, the expectations have to change, because this is not the same team a month ago right now. And that difference begins with Kyrie Irving. He's not the same player. He's not playing right now. We don't know when, if he is going, if at all he's going to play. He probably is, but the point is, we don't have that. There's not as much clarity on where he stands as there was a month ago. And that's the problem. That's why you can't look at this team and say, well, you know what? A month ago, we thought they were title contenders. And a month later, they're still title contenders. No.
Kyrie comes back. Marcus Smart is aiming for the second round of the playoffs.
Best case scenario for them, in my opinion, is that let's say you get Marcus Smart back somewhere in the second round. And you get Kyrie back, start of the playoffs. He has no issues. Marcus Smart, it comes out playing the way he did right after the All-Star break. Okay, you probably can get to the conference finals. But that's a best-case scenario. You're talking about Kyrie coming back healthy, which, let's face it, he's been dealing with pain all season long. So I don't know how much you really want to bank on that. And you're talking about Marcus Smart coming back from an injury on his ball-handling hand. I don't care about his shooting. I care about his ability to handle the ball.
I would imagine, too, that Marcus Smart's camp is going to tell him to be careful with this.
Yeah,
because
right.
he's entering restricted free agency. If Marcus Smart never plays another game this season, his value is at a high.
It's high,
I mean, because
right.
of what he played like and how the team played after the All-Star break. But even if you allow, Kyle, all the things you said, like Smart comes back, Kyrie's healthy, let's say they can get past Cleveland, Toronto, whatever, and get to the NBA Finals, even then, is it worth it to get waxed in like four games by Steph and Golden State? Look, this Celtics team, and I did an essay on this for Yahoo the other day, this Celtics team is in a completely different position than Toronto and Cleveland. Toronto is badly trying to maximize the last couple of years of Kyle Lowry's prime. Mm-hmm. Cleveland knows that every win they get in the playoffs increases their chances of bringing back LeBron James. Boston, whether people in the town want to believe it or not, they're playing for 18-19. 18-19 is when Kyrie, age 26, is at full health. When Gordon Hayward is at full health. When Tatum and Brown have another year. I don't know what happens this offseason. But I can make a reasonable argument that barring some spectacular trade that adds, you know, peace to the conference, Boston goes into next season as the favorite to come out of the Eastern Conference.
And you know,
having that information, you don't go, go as hard as possible just to get every win in this playoffs.
And when you talk about that, they don't have to do a damn thing with their roster to be the favorite next year. Because remember, they're the fifth youngest team in the NBA right now. Yeah. They have no business being talked about with the Golden States and the Houstons and Toronto. Teams that are built to win right now with veteran players who've got experience playing with one another. This team, the overwhelming majority of this team came together for the first time in training camp. So they're in a completely different stratosphere in terms of where they are and where they can go.
And not to take it too far, but think about the way that Boston has played against Golden State and Houston the last couple of years.
They've matched up better within
the You give the Celtics a full-strength roster, young guys developing. Hopefully you bring back Marcus Smart in some type of deal. We haven't even talked about Terry Rozier, who's going to be even better next year. Mm-hmm. You can make an argument that they're a legitimate, at least, threat to win a championship next year. And I think that, more than anything, you want to protect at all costs. That's why it made zero sense, even before the Celtics were definitive on Hayward when it came to bringing him back. And that's why it makes no sense to overextend Marcus Smart or to push Kyrie Irving too far.
Speaking of Marcus Smart, let's transition. What's his future, Chris? What do you think? A restricted free agent, like you said.
I talk a lot to teams. I was on the West Coast the last couple of weeks, and you spend a lot of time talking to teams with cap space and teams that have expressed interest in Marcus Smart before. The interest is still going to be strong. The question is just who is going to throw big money on the table? Like, could Sacramento, a team that's long had an affinity for Marcus Smart, put together a big type of deal? Maybe. Could Denver create some flexibility to put together that type of deal? Maybe. But I don't think Atlanta's going to do it. They're not spending any money this offseason. I don't think Chicago's going to do it, another team with a lot of cap space. There isn't the large number of teams that I think would give Marcus Smart kind of the Gary Harris type of deal that he's looking for. And failing that, I mean, people forget, and Sherrod, you know this, the Celtics, they're not against giving Marcus Smart some money. They just kind of had a ceiling on it because they know what I just said, that this offseason is not going to present a lot of suitors for Marcus Smart. So I think there's a pretty good chance, whether it's on a match deal or a new deal from Boston, that Marcus Smart's back next year.
I think Marcus is going to be back in Boston. I do.
But hold on. You know why, though? No, I'll tell you why.
You're going to tell me why.
Because Marcus won't get the money elsewhere that he wants to. So he's going to have to take a lesser deal, probably, than he thought he would get on the open market.
But what you got to remember also in your statement, it's right, but the reason why, Drapes, there's a reason why. I'm putting the cookies on the bottom shelf for you right now. The reason, because the market has changed, Drapes. You don't have to spend $17 million to get an Evan Turner anymore. You can get a legitimate high impact difference maker like Marcus Smart significantly less, because that money just isn't out there. I mean, as Chris pointed out, there aren't a ton of teams with a ton of money to spend. And Marcus Smart is a very niche type player. I don't believe Marcus Smart can play in any system, because I don't think every team can, frankly, stomach some of the downside of Marcus Smart. He's not a great shooter. If you're a team that has to win by outscoring teams, Marcus Smart is probably not the guy you're going to be going
after. So what are we talking? $10 million?
He could go even higher. Like, at least Kelly Olynyk money, like that type of deal. What 12, is it, 11, 12?
Yeah.
$11, $12 million nowadays is like mid-level exception money. Mm, it's right. More than it, but that's how teams look at it. I had this conversation bringing up Olynyk with somebody in Miami. People look at Miami and say, God, so many bad contracts. In Miami, they look at all those contracts as movable. They look at Olynyk's contract as being very movable. Yeah. So, if you can get Marcus back at $12 million per year, not only is that a reasonable salary for him, but it's also movable if you decide to put together a pack or some type of deal. One thing I don't believe Marcus will do, just knowing him, and you guys know him better than I do, so disagree with me if I'm wrong, I don't see him, you know, rolling the dice on a qualifying offer. Either he gets a big offer from somebody else, or he takes the best offer Boston's going
to
put on the table.
No, Marcus has had too many, I think, physical setbacks to just roll the dice that he's going to stay healthy enough to play through the whole season and then get that super big
like,
max
is his value going to be higher, you know?
I don't think it's going to be higher than it is right now.
I think it's topped. It's I mean, if he doesn't come back, like I just said, I mean, the way Boston went to the All-Star break scuffling. They came out of the All-Star break with Marcus Smart playing their best basketball in months. And a lot of people you talk to around the league that watch the Celtics, they tie that directly to Marcus Smart. Defensive intensity, that kind of is the high value for guys like that.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to move on real quick, guys, and talk about, you know.
Is this like overtime? Do I get paid extra for this?
No, dude, you're here. Hey, I told you, I'm running this show.
Do I fill out a sheet for this?
You should be happy that you're, you know, with hanging with two seasoned professionals like me and Sherrod.
Okay, continue.
I want to talk about the Eastern Conference. Two teams, real quick. Cleveland. You guys have been hating on the Cavs all season long. Mm-hmm. They come out, handle business last night against Toronto. I still maintain, Chris, once the playoffs start, they're ratcheted up to another level. And I don't know if anybody else in the Eastern Conference can get there.
Here's the only question you have to have about the Cavaliers is, can LeBron and can the rest of that defensive unit take the step to the next level? They can score. They can score on anybody, right? You saw this against Toronto. And I saw it against Portland last week. They can score on anybody at any time. But they can also give up, 79 points in a half to Toronto. I watched LeBron, and people ask me all the time about the MVP vote, right? And you know, for me, Harden's got it locked up, no question about it. But LeBron's probably number two. One of the things that LeBron is a criticism against him this year, he's having one of his worst defensive seasons in years. He has been overall, he can dial it up to a 10 on any individual possession.
I watched him
against Portland, right?
Yeah.
And he had a handful of the worst defensive possessions I've ever seen. There was one play, a backdoor cut to Yusuf Nurkic, when LeBron was 5 feet away, and he spent that time kind of waving at his guy, saying, go get him, go get him. And Nurkic bobbled the ball. LeBron could have gone after it. End of quarter, there was an Al-Farouq Aminu three-pointer that LeBron could have closed out on. He's doing this for a reason, right? Like, because he has to expend so much energy on the offensive end of the floor to keep them in games. But are you telling me because of the spaced-out schedule, because it's the playoffs – that LeBron and the Cavs defense is all of a sudden going to be better? That Tristan Thompson's coming back is going to make that defense better? I'm just not buying that yet.
The problem, among the many problems that Cleveland has, is his supporting cast is not giving him adequate support.
You cannot say that, dude. Kevin Love just came back 2 games ago.
I find it hilarious I'm one of Kevin Love's biggest fans. I find it hysterical that Kevin Love's being viewed as the missing link. This guy was beaten senseless by the public.
I know.
Kevin Love's coming back.
Kevin Love is a multiple-time All-Star. And when you look at any matchup in the Eastern Conference, whether it's with the Celtics, LeBron's the best player, Kyrie's the second, Kevin Love's the third. And so if you look at any matchup that the Cavs have, Kevin Love's the third best player in that series.
But Drapes, that team can't defend. And you know as well as I do, the game slows down to where the teams that typically advance from one round to the next,
What was their defensive numbers last year? I think they were like 25th or 26th.
No, not that low.
Defense.
No, not that low.
They were like middle of the pack. They were more middle of the pack. But the thing is, you knew that Cleveland, when you watched them play during the season, they weren't great defensively, but they weren't atrocious like what we're seeing now. This is a bad defensive team. And bad defensive teams don't all
so
of a sudden...
who's going to come out of the East?
Right now, it's a crapshoot. It depends on who's healthy. It depends on who's playing well. There is no definitive...
Can they come out of the East?
That's not what you're saying. You're saying that Cleveland is like the team that everybody is chasing.
I don't think banged up Boston can beat Cleveland.
No.
You know, you have Smart and Tice.
So is it a two-team race?
I don't think. I think Toronto is still the favorite right now. I mean, throw out the game they played. Throw out most of what you saw in the game they played recently against the Cavs. They were coming up. There's a third game in 4 nights. Cavs were at home. They cratered down in the fourth quarter. But they are the best home team in the Eastern Conference. It's not even close. Losses on their home floor. They're going to have home court advantage against pretty much everybody, assuming Boston doesn't put something together in the next couple of weeks. they're going to be good there. Now, what you worry about with Toronto is what I saw in the final few possessions in that Cavs game, where they reverted into the Toronto we saw the last couple of years, where it's, okay, DeRozan's not getting his touches, so let's just jack something up from wherever. Right. Let's force feed Lowry. That doesn't beat Cleveland. But they've been too good all season long not to buy into it now. And if you're still skeptical of the Van Vliets, of the Siakams, of the Jakob Poeltl's, I don't know what to tell you. Okay. They've given three quarters of a season of playing great basketball.
With very little, if any, signs of letting up. I mean, they're good.
Dwayne Casey's the coach of the year, hands down, I think. I love Mike D'Antoni.
I agree with that.
Dwayne Casey.
Stotts should be in that mix, too, Stotts, I think.
Yeah, but from this is like from start to finish.
Look at the whole body of work, not just the last six weeks.
Real quick, the Sixers, how dangerous are they, Chris, in the playoffs?
I have often believed my mantra with this, that's the wrong word, mantra, but my mindset with this has always been a young team has to take its lumps first. Right. Like, remember with a 50-win Thunder team from when the playoffs in 2010? Yeah. They put up a good fight against the Lakers in that first-round series, but ultimately they lost. I feel the same way about Philadelphia. I mean, they're going to be fun to watch in the postseason, but the fact that Ben Simmons can't shoot from 15 feet out, that's going to be something that teams who can lock in on him defensively in the playoffs are going to exploit. Outside of like J.J. Redick, they don't have guys with postseason experience. They're probably the Celtics' greatest threat for the next 5 years. But this year, I don't see them being ready.
I love what they've been able to do this year. I do. They're finally getting mileage out of Embiid to the point where he's playing relatively consistent minutes, which we've all knew if he could do that, they would be really good. But the point that Chris made, when you get into the playoffs and it's your first foray through that,
you can't manufacture what playoff basketball feels like. You can't manufacture that environment.
Because every player you talk to who goes to the playoffs for the first time will tell you it is night and day compared to the regular season. A different level of intensity, a different level of focus is required to go from one possession. Forget about games. Go from one possession to the next. It's just an entirely different beast. And Philly, as much success as they've had this year, they're just not ready for that.
Right.
And that's not a knock against them. That just acknowledging the fact that
they're
so young.
I think they could win a series, though. If they get with the right matchup against Indiana, maybe a four or five matchup.
It could be there, but I still.
This has been a great season for them. Either way, though, I mean,
even
I
if they get bounced in the first round, if they get bounced in the first round in four or five games, it's still a good season.
It had to be a great season for them. Every other one's been god awful.
This does not make up for nobody.
It's been great except for Markel Fultz still not on the court.
Dude, did you see some of the video though? The shot looked like it's coming back.
Shot's better. I'd be surprised if he's back this year though.
We're talking about the number one overall pick, and we're getting giddy about his shot.
Dude, this is the Philadelphia redshirt program. You know,
I believe I'm familiar with it.
Come back the next year. All right, Chris. See, it wasn't that bad, was it, dude?
I just want to know, do you hang out with Scal all the time
and everything, dude? You got to do this more.
Yeah,
often.
But we don't acknowledge what Scal does over here. We just look at Scal as Yahoo Sports Brian Scal.
You never mentioned NBC Sports Boston.
I give him a little bit of a plug at the top, but after that, it's
co-host Drapes. You know,
no. When have you ever seen me compliment you? I mean, you took a shot at me
from the jump.
From the jump. So, like, why would I turn around?
It's called a preemptive strike.
He wants to shake your hand.
I'm gonna get my Twitter people on you,
Chris.
Does it
bother you that you're like the third best sideline reporter in the building?
Understand. Because
at your own network?
Think about it.
Third best?
If you threw Ernie Johnson on the sidelines, he probably wouldn't be as great as, you know, some of the people they have. I'm a point guard. I dish. I don't talk in 10-second sound bites.
Kyle's the king of the, like sideline reporting question that's, like, 45 seconds long.
No, dude.
It's like, here's my God.
You were just complimenting me. You said, great job out there. That's all right, man. It's all in act. It's all in act. Chris Mannix of Yahoo Sports. Thanks so much.
Game, good. Was it? Great.
Thanks again to Chris Mannix for coming on the Celtics Talk podcast. March Madness is here. The tournament actually moving to the city of Boston. Sherrod, we got Sweet 16 and Elite Eight action this weekend at the TD Garden. Let's check in with Scal now, who had a chance to sit down with Coach Stevens as they talked about March Madness.
Coach
All right, Coach, it's NCAA tournament time, so we're just going to unfold everything about March Madness. First of all, do you feel out of bracket?
I feel out of bracket at home.
And it's...
not going well.
But it's Butler all the way, right?
That's right.
And your loyalties to Butler, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. What about like, you know, I know Brady's competitive. Does he go a different direction?
Well, I think one of the things that we always do is we gauge it based on the other three brackets or the other three teams that would enter the Final Four. That's how we, you know, see who wins the bracket. So, and the other ones, the other brackets are basically out the window too.
Yeah.
You know, we actually had my dog fill out one, and he picked the Retrievers.
Seriously?
Of UMBC. They picked the dog. So, and got, was good on a couple of no Wildcats. So, yeah. It kind of worked out well. Actually worked out better.
Do you watch the NCAA tournament now?
I watch it when I can. You know, I turn it on at the end of the games, last 5 to 10 minutes. I watch as much of the Butler games as you can, but, you know, I don't have time to watch the whole games. But it is fun to watch.
Why?
And you know, one of the things that I love about it, and I think that, and you could see this like when Buffalo was playing Arizona the other day, those kids were playing so hard with a 20-point lead with a minute and a half to go, they weren't risking anything. And they were playing with so much intensity. And you see that in the tournament. It really is like when you're in a one-and-done situation, it feels that the tension rises, and it truly is an urgent situation for 40 minutes. And it's one of the things I loved about it, one of the things I enjoy watching it. And it's amazing to watch kids step up to the plate, 18 to 22-year-olds. With all those eyes on him.
So I read some of the bios and some of the games that you played, coached, and you know, Ron Norad. It was like there are certain players that can you count on? Like when you recruit a guy, do you know this guy can do? He might not be that good throughout the season, but I know I can count on him.
So I think it takes a special amount of toughness, ability to focus, ability to prepare. And Ron Norad's a good example of a guy that was built for that. Ron would always say, and Ron's now the head coach of the Long Island Nets, spent a couple years here with us with the Celtics after he finished playing at Butler. But Ron was a guy that used to say, I can't wait to prepare to play this game. He wanted to be a coach. And so, like, when we'd get our draw, he'd be hanging out in the coach's offices watching film with the assistants getting ready to play the game. And so you knew that he knew everything about them, too. And to have guys like that on the court, you know, again, when there's a lot of uncontrollables out there with all the tension in the air, it's pretty special.
So when you recruit a guy, can you tell right from the, like, okay, he's not as talented as so-and-so, but I know he'll be a tournament type of player?
I think there's a toughness factor. There's a physicality factor. We used to say they can win on the road. And in college, that's an even bigger deal, it seems like, when you look at, you know, the winning percentages home and away than probably maybe any other sport because of the college fans are on top of you and everything else. But, you know, that was always really important when we were looking at guys, yes.
How do you determine, like, what, and better question would be, what the one-and-done rule, you a fan of it, not a fan, they should go longer, they should go, they shouldn't be have to go to the NBA?
I was a big fan of it at Butler.
You were?
Sure. Yeah, because everybody would fight for those guys, and we would recruit guys that would stay 3 and 4 years.
So is that a strategy?
And maybe get a guy or two that we shouldn't have gotten if everybody wasn't fighting for somebody else. If all the big schools in the area are all fighting for the guy that's going to be there 1 year, only one of them's getting him.
Yeah.
And he's only going to be there 1 year. And then we get, guys that are going to be there, you know, in Gordon Shelvin's case, less than that. But everybody else was there 4 or 5 years. And, I was a big fan of it then. I would say that for the game itself, I would like to see us go more to a you can come in, right away or wait 2 years, you know, something of that nature. But I haven't put a lot of time and thought into it.
Thanks so much, Scal and Coach. Good stuff. Sherrod, I know you're excited about March. This is Syracuse's time to shine.
Syracuse is still in the building. Funny how that worked out.
Shouldn't have been here, but you know what?
Listen, you
it's
open
all
the
about
door.
What you do.
You open the door, let us in the party. We're going to act a fool. We do it every time.
Here's one thing you know about Syracuse people. They always let you know they went to Syracuse. Why is that, man?
Because we're nice.
Come on, man.
Cats who played at Duke do the same thing. Cats who played at UNC do the same thing. Now, folks who went to Temple probably not.
No, because probably not. We're grounded. You know,
you're on the ground. You're on the ground. But that's another story. Right, I don't want to smash y'all.
I'm getting out of here. I got things to do. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Celtics Talk podcast. Make sure you subscribe on all your favorite podcasting apps. We'll see you next time.
Go Cuse. We out.